All right, and hello, friends. Of course, if you're listening to this podcast, you realize, well, that's Jared. And then I'm sitting here talking to my good friend, Chris Shepherd, who I refer to as the Sherpa. Today, we are going to talk college football. Now, today is going to be a little different than we normally do, because normally what we'll have is a full slate of games, and in order to get this podcast under an hour, there's no way that every week we could talk at length like we're about to talk about the two games that we have this week. So I want to start off by saying, hey, Chris, how are you today, brother?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm just lucky to be here, right? So check it out, man. Been kind of thinking about a project like this for a while, and then I'd heard you speak. I've met with you. I've heard you on podcasts, and I figure, hell, if he's into college football, this ought to be a fun conversation. So what we're going to do here, at least preliminarily, and things will change, people change, dreams change, right? We're going to talk college football before the games are played. Every week, we're going to try to, as long as it's something we think we can stick with. We want to put out about an hour-long podcast, shooting the chud over the upcoming football games. And it just so happens this is a special episode, Chris. There's only two games this week.
Yeah, it should be real easy.
Yeah, so obviously here at Stampede Blue, part of SB Nation, we primarily write about the Colts, but our staff has taken on the same attitude that the franchise has, in that great franchises are built through the draft. And that if you are really good at evaluating talent and evaluating players, it makes your draft a little easier. You can jump up and down and high-five each other when you pick Rock Ya-Sin, and everybody else in the NFL is like, who the hell is that guy, right? And you're congratulating yourself for not only having stole a top 40 pick off the Redskins in exchange for moving back like 10 picks, but then you also got a guy that's bodying Devin Funchess in practice. So, hey, I'd like to think if we've kind of taken up their attitude that, you know, great franchises are built off great college football players, then it would kind of be a service to our fan base to say, hey, Chris and I love college football. Chris is even more well-researched, more well-spoken about college football than I am. So with that in mind, I'll kind of tell you what I know and kind of throw it to you, okay?
So, yeah, we'll give it our best here.
All right, so Saturday at 7 o'clock, the Miami Hurricanes travel to the Florida Gators in a game that, if you're betting on it, Florida's the chalk pick. They're a 7.5-point favorite, ranked inside the top 10. Outside of that, really, you don't really know until I step on the field. And I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan, so you have to forgive me for saying, you know, dog the spread, right? I would definitely take Miami against the spread, by the way. I think it's going to be a close game. The onus is on both of these coaching staffs and all of these players to understand that this is a very hostile environment. Miami and Florida typically don't play nice, and it could be either a great start to a 2019 season or it could be an awful one. And so I think, at least from a fan's perspective, I'd just like to see a game played all the way to fruition without a bunch of guys getting tossed for fighting.
Yeah. I mean,
and obviously, you know, you don't want to see injuries and all that. And then I don't really know much about either team. Neither team has a bunch of guys. We're not talking about the Clemsons and the Alabamas of the world. But from our perspective, Chris, and this is kind of where I'll let you start driving, brother, is there's a lot of prospective talent for the NFL on the field during this first game of the year, this Saturday. And so yeah, with that in mind, brother, let's talk about Florida first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you picked a good place to start. Florida's got a lot of talent and a lot of guys that that really could come on. And you know, at the end of this season, we could be sitting back and looking and going, you know, okay, which one of these guys is going to go first? The odds-on favorite to be the highest pick from this Florida team as of right now is C.J. Henderson. He's at corner. He's a preseason All-American. He's a lot of guys CB1 headed into the year. So, you know, he's going to be a guy to watch. You know, TV copy, it makes it kind of tough to watch corners all the time. But I'm guessing that you're going to see a couple pass breakups from this guy. You know, he should have a big year, and I expect big things from him in this game. The other guy lining up across from him is actually got a connection to our Colt. It's Marco Wilson. He's a redshirt sophomore, so he's a little bit young. If most redshirt sophomores shouldn't come out, most redshirt sophomores are going to choose to go back. But he's a brother of Quincy Wilson, and he's a guy that has gotten some talk as being one of the better corners. And depending on how he plays, not just in this game, but all season long, he might be a guy that decides to come out. But that's a pretty cool connection to the Colts there with Marco. So those two guys on defense are the guys that I'm probably going to focus on the most. With that said, David Reese, linebacker, and Kyrie Campbell, the defensive tackle, both those guys on the defensive side of the ball are other guys that could potentially be drafted this year. Mm-hmm. And really, Florida, they've just got a ton of talent on the defensive side. The offensive side, they have some talent, but I'm more excited at this point about watching their defense and what those guys can do.
Okay, so what we can say without having seen tape, so one of the things that I like to do, Chris, I don't know how you feel about this, but when I do research, I don't want to watch film. I'm not a film watcher. We're talking about a 5 to 10 minute conversation that we're going to have about a football game, and those are only going to get shorter, right? And so all we're really going to do is base how we feel on highlights. But based on what you've just said, the bulk of Florida's talent is on the defensive side of the football. Mm-hmm. In fact, their preseason All-American is a defender. And right. It's going to be difficult to actually kind of demonstrate that on TV. But here's an opportunity for, you know, here at Stampede Blue, in our research and the things that we see, is we see a Florida defender is listed as an All-American. He might have a couple pass breakups, but in general, he's probably going to get voided, right? Because he's a preseason right. All-American.
Yeah.
So Miami's going to probably take that opportunity away from him. And that being said, now how do we, you know, obviously I'm a Miami fan, so I only want to hear kind things. But that being said, I kind of have an idea what's going on. The team, you know, several guys got drafted last year. Team's probably in more of a rebuilding mode, probably mm-hmm. a little younger. The guy I thought that was going to be their starting quarterback isn't. He's actually battling for backup. And then mm-hmm. the other guy battling for backup quarterback could potentially be a wide receiver. So you can see how I'm kind of nervous
right.
about this Miami team, because I know, like, you know, like we all know, like a good quarterback, a good quarterback is the difference between winning a football game and just getting blown out because you can't move the football. So tell me some good things about my Hurricanes.
So Miami, like you said, this team has a lot of talent too, but there are more questions. And, you know, I think that probably reflects why they're not ranked preseason. But with that said, you know, I think that they've still got some guys that are definitely worth watching just as individuals, if nothing else. Shaq Quarterman, he's plays linebacker. I expect that he'll be talked about pretty much all season long as a guy to watch at the off-ball linebacker spot. Jonathan Garvin, he's going to be an edge defender. I don't know if he's going to translate best to defensive end or outside linebacker at the next level, but he's a guy that's going to be getting at the quarterback and kind of trying to wreak havoc there. So you guys have also got a couple of guys that have transferred in, and one of them that might do something. He's kind of a long shot, in my opinion, as Trayvon Hill. He's another edge defender. He transferred in from Virginia Tech. So on the defensive side of the ball, you guys have a few guys to watch too. And you never know. These are preseason lists that I'm pulling from. So as the season goes on, there are going to be guys all over college football, not just from these teams, obviously, but all over that are going to pop up out of nowhere that are getting an opportunity or made a big jump in the offseason, whatever the case may be. You know, when you're 19, 20 years old, you can get a lot better really quick, and seemingly it comes out of nowhere. So as of right now, these are the guys that I would watch on the defensive side of the ball for Miami. Really, I would focus mostly on Shaq Quarterman and watching what he can do.
Absolutely. And so if you're just a college football fan and just real excited to get to watch college football like I am, I'd be just as excited if Miami wasn't traveling to Florida to play an interstate rival, right? So yep. Obviously it's a big game, for the kids at Miami. It's a big game for kids at Florida. It's big for college football. These are college football towns. You don't hear a lot. I mean, and I know I'm I'm kind of not talking about recent success in like the last decade or anything, but Miami and Florida annually are not basketball programs, right? The other big moneymaker in college football. These are football programs. Something I do want to point out just as a jab to the way things are, when they tell you that they can't pay kids to play college football, I would just like to point out that the average remaining ticket cost to that Miami-Florida game is $219. Pay those kids. And yeah. That's more expensive than any NFL football game beside a playoff game.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I mean, I've gone to Colts games and spent $8 on regular season tickets. So just kind of something I saw that was like, huh, and this is going to be a hotly contested game. Remember, it's August in Florida.
Yeah. Right.
These kids have been practicing in dog heat, almost 100 degrees and really humid all summer. They've been hitting each other. And that was my initial thought when I realized, like, oh crap, they're opening night too. Like, oh man, they better hope they can keep their, you know, their competitive spirit tied down a little, because it'd be a real bad look for NCAA football if this got ugly.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it's Florida, right? I mean, so in my head, in my mind, it goes Texas, Florida, if we're talking about amateur level football, right? Mm-hmm. That's
Texas, where I'm Florida, at. California, baby.
Right, exactly. And so when you take two Florida teams, even though they're geographically, it's a pretty good drive. They're spread apart. With that said, there's still two Florida teams with a bunch of Florida kids and a bunch of Florida fans. And the passion's going to be there. And it should be an entertaining game. Hopefully, like you said, everybody, you know, keeps everything in check and there's nothing ugly that happens. But, you know, at the same time, it's Florida. I kind of halfway expect it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be real honest. I've been a college football fan long enough to remember. Do you remember Miami, Ohio State in the national championship?
I do, yeah.
That was one of those games I remember. The lead up to it was talking about how, you know, Ohio State plays a lot of games indoors, and that they're not ready for Miami. These kids play outside all year long. They play two seasons of football in high school. That's Texas and Florida. And other states are starting to adopt it, where you get like a winter football program. But like, for example, when I played high school football, you pretty much had to play other sports as your winter workout, just to be able to get a workout in. Otherwise, you're kind of getting shooed out of the gym because you're not a part of that program.
Right.
But now, I mean, I got cousins that are in high school right now that are just now getting to play baseball year-round instead of having to play, you know, track. Or to wrestle or do something else in your off months. They're just now getting to winter baseball, where they actually have a baseball league to play in. And I get it. Those leagues have existed, but it's not available to everybody.
Right.
Right. So I'm talking about what's recently become available. So when you think about, I remember almost two decades ago, it's been like 18 years since that football game. I remember the fans. I remember how much of a culture shock it had to be. You know, from sweater wearing mom and pop from nowhere, Ohio, to meet with we came to party Miami folk.
Right.
Like Miami is the New York Yankees of college football in terms of like the people that like it. It's like a bunch of celebrities. And oh, by the way, The Rock, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Haloti Ngata, like all these guys went to Miami. The backbone of the NFL for like the last 30 years has come out of the Miami. And I get it. There are like great players that don't go to Miami. I understand that, man. But I'm talking about like Michael Irvin. There's a lot, there's a lot of guys that like kind of make up the Hall of Fame that went to Miami. So this for me is bittersweet in that they're opening the 2019 season. We're going to start talking about football, and all I can think about is that national title game and how they were fighting on the field and how these two they weren't used to each other, but this is a little different. These guys know each other really well. Because if you really think about, if you weren't going to Miami to play, where else might you be getting recruited by? Oh, I don't know. How about Florida, Florida State, FIU, you know, ECF or UCF? There's tons of good football programs in Florida. So this is an interstate rivalry. You know, it's SEC, ACC. It kind of is the tone setter for the South.
Right.
Depending on who wins this, you know, I just want a close football game that isn't penalty ridden and there aren't a bunch of fights and illegal hits and just a bunch of trash. I want to see high quality football. And I know that's what they're capable of, because you wouldn't be there if you weren't capable of it. So it's not that I know that, you know, it's not, but like we all know, it's, they've been hitting themselves all summer, and this is their first opportunity to hit somebody else. And it's somebody, you know, it's a different kind of head game. The tempo swings are a big deal. The big hits are a big deal. The turnovers are a big deal. But it's like we've been talking about here. I couldn't tell you who their quarterback is from Miami, and I'm a Miami fan.
Right, yeah.
It's N'Kozy Perry, and he's battling for a backup position to a player I've never heard of. And the other guy battling for a backup quarterback position, it is also potentially a wide receiver. So I have some concern there. And then I don't really know of anyone other than Shaq, and he played last year, right? Mm-hmm. So we can say fully confidently anyway, okay, so we expect Quarterman and Henderson to show out given an opportunity in what's supposed to be a relatively close game. I mean, it's not double digits on the spread. It's 7.5 points. Right. But I would just like to see it be close, like a 28-24 game, or, you know, 24-21 game. Obviously I'm not saying I want guys to lay down and let people walk on them. It's just, I just don't want to see all the unnecessary stuff that kind of muddies the game.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's fair. I think, there's nothing wrong with wanting a clean game. And, you know, when you look at offense with either team, and we can start with Miami, but when you look at offense and you look at the prospects that are there, so across college football this year, just preseason, the wide receiver class looks like it could be really fun. There could be a lot of good wide receivers that come out, and one of those guys for Miami is Jeff Thomas. He's a little undersized. He reminds a lot of people of Hollywood Brown, but he's a guy that if you know, Florida C.J. Henderson can't shut him down. And, you know, it depends, too. It depends on if C.J. Henderson's going to follow him around, or if they're going to try to move Jeff Thomas in the slot, and if he's going to get matched up with Marco Wilson or one of the other Florida corners. But just watching Jeff Thomas and seeing what he can do, creating some of those big plays, and if he can avoid some of those big hits, then maybe he'll be able to kind of break it open and keep the game close, if not pull out an upset for Miami. The other guy that I'm really going to be paying attention to, and I know I'm probably the only guy that's going to be paying attention to this guy because he plays guard, but it's Navon Donaldson. He is a massive individual. He's 6'4", 6'5", 350 pounds. But he's a good athlete. The guy can move. That's kind of the story on him. So if you're like me and you like watching interior offensive line, look at the right guard spot, and Donaldson will be there and moving some people.
That's for Miami or Florida?
Miami. Miami Hurricane. So I'd be watching him, and he's going to be pushing around some pretty decent Florida defenders. So this is going to be a good test. This is going to be a tape that a lot of NFL scouts turn on at the end of the year to kind of judge what Donaldson can really do against top talent. So this will be a good game to watch on the trenches, especially for a guy like Donaldson.
Yeah, and then you think about Quarterman on the other side of the ball, mm-hmm. playing linebacker, so those guys might meet. So the interesting thing about this football game for me will be without – confidence in quarterback play, like, just because I don't, Jeff Driskel is not still in Florida. That was his name, right? That was a former Florida quarterback. I don't think he's there anymore, right? So they both sides have some unknown quantities at quarterback, which tends to muddy down the ability to move the football. So it'd be interesting to see with a smaller class receiver like that with Jeff Thomas, if they're able to kind of use him and get him in space and use him in the screen game and then really get him one-on-one with who cares, right? If he's fast enough and athletic enough, he make a play and make something happen. And then obviously if you think, and I'm just one of those people, like if this is what Chris Shepard thinks is what we're doing, we're watching the interior guard play or for Miami, and there's apparently a big old boy running around in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've kind of talked about it. There's a cornerback for Florida and a linebacker for Florida, or linebacker for Miami. Am I crazy?
And Florida too. David Reese is a really solid linebacker for Florida, and also Kyrie Campbell. So if you want to watch that matchup between Kyrie Campbell and I'm assuming Navon Donaldson for Miami and Kyrie Campbell for Florida are going to meet up. It's a guard defensive tackle matchup. That's an elite level college matchup. Those are the matchups that NFL scouts want to see. They want to see NFL talent against NFL talent. This game has that up front. So if you're capable, and not everybody is big on guard play, I get it. But if you can watch a guard and a tackle go toe to toe, and you kind of know what's going on, or if you can just look and see, hey, Kyrie Campbell got the best of him on the past three plays. What's going on? If you can know that much, it should be an entertaining matchup, and it's one that scouts are going to look at all year long.
Yeah, when you scout this game, one of the good things is you didn't have to send your quarterbacks coach. You got to send all the other guys, right? So you can send him somewhere else. I imagine I hate to be that guy and make a joke like that.
Well, to be fair to Florida, they do have Felipe Franks, and he is coming back, and they a lot of people do expect Felipe Franks to make a leap. And I mean, you know, it's Dan Mullen, right? Dan Mullen runs the same offense that created Tebow and created Dak. So, you know, is Felipe Franks that guy? I don't know. I don't really think so. But at the same time, you know, if the kid can run quarterback power over and over again, if he can throw just a little bit, they should be okay there. But, you know, you don't really know. You don't really know if they're going to come out and what they're going to look like. But, you know, Florida's got some good pieces on offense too. But really, for me, the premier matchup is going to be, you know, Miami's guard against Florida's defensive tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was kind of trying to get there. I'm just having a hard time doing it. When the quarterback play isn't going to be the highlight of the game, it gives you an opportunity to look at those other aspects of football that you don't normally look at. So I get it. A lot of people listening to this are thinking, like, what at all is interesting about this guard tackle? Well, those guys could see each other in the NFL.
Right.
So it's good to have tape when you're both highly looked at players. Like, it's good that you meet. And, you know, it's just like that J.J. Watt commercial, right? Like, if you have a rival, you have a reason to work. Like, that would be the most motivating thing. Now that I have perspective and my life is much different now, if I had to do it all over again, I think I could have tackled it a little differently. But having a rival or having someone whose name means something too on the line in this matchup, in this game, would be a motivator for me if I were either player.
Right.
And because the quarterback play isn't going to be dynamic or there are question marks about it, is really what I was getting at. These aren't household names that are up for awards. Let's put it like that. This isn't Herbert versus Tua, right? The game you want to see in the end. Because of that, you're able to kind of say, you know, there are 10 other matchups on the field that are probably far more interesting than two struggling quarterbacks. That's what I'll be excited to see who else kind of steps up for both teams and makes a play. Because I really think it is like a one touchdown game, right? So like I've said jokingly, like bet against the spread. Sure, Felipe Franks, sure, Dak Prescott and Tim Tebow. But on this mobile quarterback power tip, I wanted to ask you, what was your impression of Lamar Jackson in terms of the draft last year? Do you think that he got slept on?
So that's a tough question, because there's a lot that goes into it. One thing with Lamar Jackson that is, it's actually really obvious when you watch his game at Louisville, he's gotten better as a passer every single year that he's had good coaching. So it's tough to sit there and say, well, he wasn't worth this or he wasn't worth that, or he should. It's tough to say that he should have been drafted higher too. So it's tough. It's really tough with him because he is an elite running quarterback. The problem is that it's not necessarily, I don't even think his throwing is necessarily the problem. I think that that is going to improve and he is going to get better. He's shown that he'll put in the work. And I think that he's got a strong arm, and I think he can throw with touch. I think that he can throw with accuracy. Doing it consistently is obviously something that he's got to improve on, but I think that he can do that. The issue for me isn't any of those things. I don't have a problem with any of that. It's how he's built. Lamar Jackson is
6 foot
very,
two ten.
yeah, very, he's very, very thin. And if you're going to take a lot of shots as a running quarterback, we've seen it with Cam Newton. Cam Newton's beat up, and Cam Newton's 250 pounds. He is a solid, well-built. The guy, if Cam Newton came out and played linebacker and he never played quarterback, you wouldn't think twice about it.
Right. Just be like, that's a big ass linebacker.
Right. You'd be like, okay, yeah, he looks like a linebacker with
Yeah.
really
Or like a D
weird.
end.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It
If
wouldn't.
he could have played opposite of Peppers and them actually won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you wouldn't have thought twice about it just based
Nah.
on the way they're built. My biggest issue with Lamar Jackson is the way that he's built. It doesn't have anything to do with his talent as a quarterback or a passer. I've seen a lot of jokes that is Lamar Jackson the best rookie wide receiver from last year? That's funny. I get it. Those are jokes.
Yeah.
But I don't have any
I
problems
got
with.
something for you.
Yeah.
I got something for the Lamar Jackson haters.
What's
If you remember last year in our conversations, though just the ones on Slack where we were talking about evaluating players, you do remember me saying like Lamar Jackson's getting straight slept on in this class. Where
I know that you were a Lamar fan, yeah.
he was like top three, top four. So I kind of waited on it, and I had known several points of data, and data is all that matters. We live in a world where the math matters, right? There are several things that Lamar Jackson did last year that have never been done before in football, and I just wanted to share this with you before we even play it down this year. You tell me about how much it matters. Lamar Jackson was the last player drafted in the first round. So when I say, did he get slept on? That's a loaded question. He did, and here's why. For the first, I believe, six games of his rookie season, the offense was tailored around Joe Flacco. When Joe Flacco got hurt and they put in Lamar Jackson, they did not make him run Joe Flacco's offense. They started fresh. They installed the offense every week when he went out there to play. He is one of 11 quarterbacks in NFL history to complete 145 passes as a rookie, and the other 10 players are known starters in the NFL or Hall of Famers. Again, he's also a running quarterback, and he had 147 rushing attempts in 10 games. He led the NFL in that time period, not in touches, though, in yards per carry. He was averaging 5.1 yards per carry. If you're a fantasy football player, or if you pay attention to, I don't know, running backs, you know that 5 yards a carry as a running back is really good. 4.5 is really good, right? So if you think about completed 145 passes as a rookie is a record, is one of 11 people to do it all time in less than 16 games. And then also had 147 carries for over 5 yards a carry. And his efficiency was actually really high. It's just that, again, he wasn't learning like an offense that they practiced in the preseason and in training camp. They were installing the offense as he went. So if you think about errant passes, bad passes, like miscommunication, when you're completing 57.1% of your passes, right? Yeah, you could probably get like 10% better, maybe if you knew the offense, or I don't know, practiced it, or have, I don't know, like a season in it. So when people talk about, is this guy underappreciated, undervalued? A guy like oh, Kyler Murray, right, or a guy like Jalen Hurts, or a guy like Tua. These guys are all, they're going to talk bad about you, right? That's all that these pundits do now is say the negative aspects of that. But think about Lamar Jackson being the last player drafted in the first round of that class, being inserted like midway through a season, and then being dominant offensively, and not just from a running perspective. Like, he was successful on both ends. And then think about promise and what these kids are potentially capable of. It's just about being put in a system that will utilize you correctly.
Right.
And that will be really exciting in the NFL to see in year two, what do they do to elevate Lamar Jackson? Because you're going to have to see him do the same thing with Kyler Murray, except Kyler Murray is the centerpiece of that Arizona offense, where Lamar Jackson didn't get that opportunity. So it's just something to nibble on and ponder about. Like, what if it did this way? Go ahead.
To be fair, though, Kyler Murray is a better prospect. For my money, he's a better player. I don't have anything against what Lamar Jackson did or can do. Like I said, I think he's a really talented guy. Yeah. I think that you have to have a very specific offense tailored around Lamar Jackson. And you're right, he didn't have that going into last season. They had Joe Flacco's offense, and they were trying to do something different for him. So having a whole offense to tailor, or a whole offseason to tailor the offense to what he can do, absolutely, I think he's going to look better this year. And I think he'll be able to put up better numbers, in addition not only to it being his second year and being comfortable in the NFL, there's going to be an offense that's going to work to his strengths. So yeah, he's probably going to make some big leaps. But with that said, you've got to be, as an NFL team, you've got to be willing to make those changes to your offense. And the Ravens obviously were, but you've got to be willing to make those changes to your offense to tailor it to fit a guy like Lamar Jackson. And that's okay. If it wins, it wins. Who cares if you have to do it? But you've got to be willing, number one. And number two, again, it's the way he's built. Can Lamar Jackson hold up? And he did his rookie year, because he's, what, 21, 22, 23? But, you know, again,
he looks more like a flight risk than, you know what I mean? Like, he looks somebody like might just take off flying. He'll come down to earth eventually and have to settle down a little bit and play quarterback behind the line of scrimmage instead of out in front of it.
And I think that he can do that, but at the same time, you never want to take that away from him completely, because that is part of what makes him special. Never want to take the ability away. You never want to say, hey, man, don't run. the problem is that, again, he's thin. He's very small. And, you know, historically, guys who are thin in the NFL that carry the ball a lot, man, eventually, sooner or later, it's going to catch up, and normally it's sooner. It's not usually later.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be worried about him, about Lamar suffering statistically. I would be more worried about him just being an injury liability and then being difficult to replace.
Right. He's impossible to replace.
Because he's so dynamic. It's like,
It's
like having a race car with nitrous on it and nobody else has nitrous. And then that car wrecks, and now you just have what everybody else has. It's not the same advantage.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to build – that should be true for every team that has a franchise quarterback, right? You shouldn't have a guy that's going to be able to step in and run the offense the exact same way. So, yeah, but, I mean, that's especially true with a guy like Lamar Jackson, who has a very unique skill set at the position. You just – if he goes down, you're screwed. Like, it's just not going to work out. Nobody, your backup's not going to come in and run what he ran. You're going to need to prepare for your top 10 pick. That's what you need to do.
Prepare for your top 10 pick. That's funny. Yeah. Okay. So now on Saturday, which, by the way, Saturday is the first college game day. They'll be down at the University of Florida. And we've kind of run the gamut of the information available prior to week one for that game. So let's look at the second contest on Saturday at 10:30 Eastern. Arizona Wildcats and the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors will play. And in this game, it looks like Arizona is 11.5-point favorite. something to think about in terms of this football game. And this will actually be the exciting game to watch. And this is the reason, gentlemen, that you put the kids to bed after the first game, probably in the end of the third quarter, so you can get another drink, refill your snack, and sit down and get ready to watch a game. There's probably going to be like 75 points scored as opposed to that Miami Florida game. That could be a 10-7 game. No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
But this game is not going to be that way. And I always say, when it comes to the over under, when you're looking at the over under, it's either because there's really bad defenses or really good offenses. And that's kind of what you've come to expect out of an Arizona team or a Hawaii team. Hawaii has had really good offenses historically, not had much to talk about unless it's just an individual defensively. And then Arizona, similarly so. They're typically known for having a pretty good offense, not really necessarily known for defensive prowess. So I don't know much about this game other than that. What do you got for us in regards to this Wildcat Warrior matchup on Saturday night?
So Hawaii's going to come out and they run. It's going to look a lot like a spread, like a traditional spread, the air raid style offense, because their offense is what the air raid was based on. They're going to run the run and shoot. Hawaii's been running the run and shoot for a long time. There's a huge history there. If you're a nerd like me and you're interested in that sort of stuff, you can go back and you can read actually about the run and shoot BYU. You can read about how Mike Leach and Hal Mumme learned from BYU and created the air raid and how it's gone all over. And you can't go anywhere without finding fingerprints anywhere in football at any level without finding fingerprints of the air raid, which started with the run and shoot that Hawaii now runs. So Hawaii is going to run a wide open offense, a lot of downfield passing, a lot of vertical stuff. And their quarterback, Cole McDonald, this draft class for quarterbacks it could be special, or it could be one of those that we look back and we go, man, what happened? But Cole McDonald's kind of a sleeper that some people feel could kind of break into day one talk, based on a lot of different things. He's not a guy it's not a hill I'm willing to die on. I don't think Cole McDonald is a surefire first round talent.
So like a Drew Locke.
Yeah, exactly. He's a guy that could elevate his status and move up into that conversation. At the same time, if Cole McDonald gets drafted in the fifth round next year, wouldn't surprise me. So he's a guy that there's a lot of questions there, but I think that he has the talent and he's in a quarterback friendly system. So we're going to get a good look to see what he can do. And again, it's a run and shoot. So there are going to be a lot of screens. They're going to work in a lot of those things, but they're going to try to push the ball downfield. So we're actually going to get to see this guy drive the ball. It's not just going to be dink and dunk and those sort of things, which is fine. That's a good way to win football games, but we are going to get to see what this guy can do throwing the ball down the field. So Cole McDonald's a guy to watch in this one. Like you said, they're probably going to put up a lot of points. If I had to guess, I'd say there's going to be a lot. On the other side of the ball, Arizona's got Khalil Tate. Khalil Tate is a legit NFL prospect. I'm not sure that it kind of depends what he could do. He could elevate himself, but Khalil Tate, right. I want to say he was a four-star athlete coming out. He transferred. He played under Rich Rodriguez in a spread system, and then he came into Kevin Sumlin's pro style offense. So this guy's got a lot of experience in college football. He is a legit prospect. He's not. I don't know that he's a guy that's got the talent that can elevate him to that first second round talk. With that said, he's a great college quarterback, and watching those two guys go back and forth should be fun. And there should be points, like you said, put up in this one. So should be good to see. As far as just draft prospects go, there's not a lot that I feel really good about. JJ Taylor, he's a running back for Arizona. He's 5'6", 160 pounds. he's super undersized, right? Like he's not a guy that's probably going to get a lot of talk as a redshirt junior. With that said, the guy's a really electric returner. So, you know, in the return game, watch for JJ Taylor for Arizona to maybe break one. He's going to be a fun guy to watch, at the next level. I don't know. He might get a look as a returner. But nobody's drafting a guy who's 5'6", 160 to come in and carry the load. So, other than that, you've got a couple guys on the defensive side for Arizona. Colin Schooler, he's a linebacker, and Kalen Wilborn. He's an edge defender. They're both juniors, though. And again, unless either one of those guys just has an insane year, being at Arizona, and you know, all things considered, those guys are probably not going to declare this year. For Hawaii, your other guys that you're going to look at, Cole McDonald, the quarterback, obviously, is going to be throwing to a lot to Cedric Bird. He's a wide receiver. So watch for that connection. Cedric Bird's, he's got an outside shot. We're talking late round here. And then on the defensive side of the ball for Miami, for Hawaii, is Roe Ferris. He plays corner. Again, he's a guy that he's got an outside shot. But you know, I was trying to find prospects for this one, and it wasn't super easy. Arizona's definitely got the more pro prospects than Hawaii. But either way, this is going to be a fun game to watch. Should be a lot of points. Fireworks should be coming all over the place. So should be good to see.
So here's the question that I'd have: if you're a head football coach and you have a quarterback like Khalil Tate, who played for a year under Rich Rod, right, who has become one of the more talented head coaches in college football, he's a household name, coming into your pro-style offense, would you be happier about that? Because the kid's got, you know, he speaks two languages, right? He kind of knows the pro-style nomenclature, but he's also very familiar with this Rich Rod spread offense. Or would you just rather have a guy sit in the same system for a couple years and see how he develops within that system? Or is it just knowing a couple languages makes it really easy for you to your skills to transition? Because then you're changing your footwork a little bit. You're making sure if I'm thinking about going from like a spread offense to a pro style offense, you're just doing a little more play action, a little more rollout, a little more. Carry the rock around until you decide to huck it, football, as opposed to get rid of it quickly, run a lot of screens, run a lot of draws, like a spread offense really does. I would wonder, like, is it better that you got more promise out of a kid like Khalil Tate, or would you rather just have a guy in your own system for a couple years?
Well, I think it's definitely not a bad thing, especially if he can come in and learn both systems, right?
And you can incorporate what he already knows into your offense. And...
Right. So the air raid by design is super simple by design. Again, you can make it complicated, but the right. air raid is going to be super simple for a quarterback to pick up. That's the whole point. It's simple. So you can do things fast. You can run. It's all about option routes. So You've got to be able to make quick reads. The wide receivers have to make quick reads. Quarterbacks have to make quick reads. You have to know where you're going with the football. Everybody's got to be on the same page. But it's simplified. It's made really easy. So if you can understand that, and then you come in and you have the ability to understand not only the language, but also just the ability to get everybody in a huddle, call the plays, and go back out, get under center, take a snap. That's definitely beneficial, right? Because we're seeing it, that used to matter a whole lot more than what it does. Now we're seeing guys like Baker Mayfield, who in college, I don't think he was under center once, go number one overall. So it's not as important as it used to be. With that said, it's definitely not a bad thing to have experience in both. The NFL is working in so much air raid now that, you know, they've got to be able to do both of those things. So having a guy that can do both, yeah, that's good. You know, it's going to show that mentally he can process from a playbook perspective, from a leadership perspective of, you know, commanding a huddle. You know, it's good to have both. That said, you know, I don't know that necessarily puts him ahead of anybody, just that alone. Yeah. But you know, if it were a guy that had experience being successful in both systems And if you had the same grade on a guy that was successful in both and a guy that was just successful in one system, maybe that pushes him over the edge. Maybe you go, okay, you know, no matter who the offensive coordinator is, this guy's going to be able to pick up the offense. Maybe that pushes him over if you have the same exact grade and you think the guy's going to be just as good no matter what. You know, maybe that pushes it, but, you know, I don't know how big of a bump that really gives, but
I got you.
Yeah, I know that Khalil Tate and Cole McDonald should be fun to watch in this one. So,
all right. So then one of the things I wanted to say about the difference between college football and the NFL. So I don't remember the quarterback, so you have to forgive me there. But I was watching – oh, it was like probably Good Morning Football or ESPN Live or something like that. And they were asking a rookie, I'm assuming it was Baker Mayfield. Or maybe it was Drew Locke. It could have been Baker or Drew Locke. It could have been both of them. Hell, I don't know. And basically they were talking about the difference between the NFL and college football. And right away, the answer was nomenclature. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, speaking someone else's English. What I heard was, when I was in college, when we would call a play, it had one word.
Right.
Like Iowa. Well, what happened when they called Iowa? All I know is I'm throwing an out or a hitch. That's all I know to the right.
Right.
And you're like, really? But like everyone else has a specific job as far as Iowa goes. And then you've seen the programs with cards that they hold up, and they're only really looking at one of those, and everything else is misdirection and all that stuff. In the NFL, it's different. I don't know what the college rules are on coaches being able to talk to the quarterback through the earpiece, but I don't think it doesn't seem like it would be the same given the way they call plays in college football. And I imagine that has to change at some point. You'd want the kids to be as prepared for the NFL as possible. So that just seems like an easy thing to do, but that wouldn't surprise me if the NCAA completely dropped the ball on that too. However, if I remember correctly, the guy's asked, well, what does Iowa mean? And he's like, I just know the route combination I'm throwing. And then, so you'd have to go to like every offensive player and ask them what it means when Iowa was called. Well, right. What's it mean now that you're in the NFL? And he goes, oh, it means pro right, split. This is like a counter tray. And the wide receivers are just running people off and blocking downfield.
Right.
And so he like, it's a pro right split motion counter tray. You guys call it Iowa. And he's like, right. And he's like, what do you call it in the NFL? Pro right split counter tray motion, like
right.
Calling out the whole play in the huddle. And then you just think about how they try to dumb it. See what is happening is they're trying to get kids NFL ready. By dumbing down the things that do not matter once you get in the NFL.
Right.
The things that don't matter are what you called that play does not matter. It matter what happened between the whistles. But at college, they're just trying to get kids lined. You know, it's one of the things I've learned lately, so we'll kind of make it like a theme of the show. No one knows what they're doing. Everybody's just making it up as they go along. Right. There are no correct answers. There's just a whole bunch of worthless. Right. But from my perspective, now that we kind of have that conversation, you know, they're dumbing it down at this college level, individualizing what you're supposed to do at your position off of one word. Right. Which is probably like cohesion right now in management schools. And then when you get them into the NFL, they'll actually teach them football. They'll actually know the formation, what every position group is doing, because that probably make you a little better of a football player. And I can imagine they're also pushing that nomenclature into the NFL, where they can just say a word, Omaha, right? And everyone knows what they're doing, regardless of what they thought they were going to do. Well, now that word's been said, now we have all a unique role. But yeah, that's one of the things I was listening to last week, kind of made me laugh, where they're asking him like, oh, so how was play calling in college? Oh, yeah, it was like one word or right. Like a card I read off.
Right.
Did you ever get in the huddle and like get on a knee and draw a play in the dirt? Like, nah, man, we don't do that. Like,
right. Yeah. And so some of that is, some of that's a really like old school NFL coaching mindset. Being able to call a million different plays by having really specific language, by telling everybody in the huddle exactly what they're going to be doing, by going through, you could have a play call that's a paragraph long,
right?
And it's giving every guy their specific job instead of simplifying it, dumbing it down. I'm not going to say how I got a copy of it, but I got a copy. It's been years ago. I'd have to find it. I don't even know if I have it. But I got a copy of the 2004 Chicago Bears playbook. It's from offensive coordinator Terry Shea. And it was, I found out later, I didn't know it at the time when I got it, but it was legendary in NFL circles. That's probably why I had availability to it. Actually, it was legendary as being the thickest NFL playbook that anybody could ever know. And for a long time, NFL coaches were proud of that. It was a point of pride, like, oh, look how thick my playbook is. Yeah. And it was meant to be like, look how many plays I can draw up. And so it was like an ego thing. It was look at what I can do, when in actuality, that makes it insanely difficult for anybody to pick up and understand your playbook. Right. So, you know, I understand the idea of wanting to be able to do a lot of different things. The fact of the matter is, I mean, in the NFL, on a crazy day, you're only running, if it's insane and there's overtime, what, 70, 75 plays,
right?
Maybe like max. So, you know, I get wanting to have that, but I think that a blend between, you know, college play calls and pro play calls, you know, simplifying that down, but not making it so simple that, you know, that you're handcuffing yourself in what you can do. I think that there's got to be a blend there. And I think, having a guy that has experienced a little bit of both of that, hopefully not the paragraph long, hopefully that goes away. But having a guy that has experience doing both those things, you know, it definitely can't hurt.
Absolutely. So here we're basically wrapping up a good hour chat where we've talked about the two games that will happen on Saturday at 7:30 and 10:30 Eastern Standard Time as part of college football's opening weekend. We talked about players to watch from a draft perspective. So if you get caught up in the muddiness of the quarterback play in the first game, you should be excited about the quality of the quarterback play in the second game. And then we talked about offensive lineman prospects, defensive lineman prospects, cornerbacks, linebackers, wide receivers. So there is talent all over the field. It's just about who shows out and who shows up. And that even comes all the way down to special teams, right? Like one of the preseason All-Americans, what was his name? JJ from...
JJ Taylor.
JJ Taylor from Arizona is a preseason All-American special teams player. So that's sort of the interesting nuances we'll try to deliver for you. Obviously, when we move forward, if this podcast gets any sort of reception and people say you should can it or you should keep going, what we want to do is a similar for you. But just understand, you know, next weekend, games start on Thursday. There's probably 150 games. Like, there's just so much football, college football every week now. No, there's probably like 60 something games, like 60, 70 games. Well, like 120, 119, what is there, 127 now Division I programs or something like that?
If you consider D2 and then NAIA and D3, I'm not going to be covering D3 and NAIA, but I mean, all things told, yeah, no, you're probably right. There's probably 150, 160 games, but yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so we're really focused on trying to make sure you're aware who's playing who. We'll talk about maybe like a game of the week. Largely, we'll just go down the schedule. We'll try to bring up a couple players from each team that we say, hey, this guy could show out. This is what he did last week. Oh, da, da, da. And then make sure we point out like, hey, this is a this game's got some NFL talent in it. These guys are playing against each other. That's a cool matchup. Just to give you something else to watch, because I get it, man. When you're watching your team play, most of you are probably drinking anyway. Like, most of you are probably just kind of hoping, the same thing I'm hoping, nobody gets injured, that the game's fun to watch, and that there aren't something that deteriorates the quality of the game on film anyway. But yeah, so next week it'll be a little more concise. Won't get to talk at length because there'll be way more than two games. So with that being said, we'll kind of wrap this up. I think for now, like college football preview show is kind of where we're at in our headspace. And then we can, of course, adjust that as the need arises. If there's a follow-up that people request, we could probably squeeze that in, I'm sure. And I've been Jared here with my friend Chris Shepherd, the Sherpa, we call him, with Stampede Blue. And everybody have a good rest of your day.
See ya.